Hello. It's September 5th, 2024. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all had a great week so far, or have had a great week so far, I should say, and are preparing for a hopefully good weekend. Now, I know many of you who are regular listeners of the show are probably like, what in the world is wrong with Simone this time? And why hasn't she had new episodes since March? And as a matter of fact, I just got a review. I read a review that said, I'm the most inconsistent podcast that they've ever heard or listened to. But again, well, I apologize. Like I always say, though, or like I've said in the past, life truly gets in the way sometimes for me making content. But I plan to change that going forward, as I have written some new episodes recently, and all I have to do now is record and edit. Thanks to you all who have continued to support the show, however, and I hope to not let you down this time. And going into the episode, today's episode is a little shorter than the other typical episodes. Not too much shorter, but it may be in a slightly different format that you're used to, because I do not have a lot about the victim's background and upbringing. However, I felt that this case is still interesting enough, no matter the length. Lastly, I'll go ahead and warn you that today's case has to deal with some aspects of domestic violence, so listener's discretion is advised. And with that, let's dive in to today's case. The year was 1998, and in Wisconsin's oldest city, Green Bay, many of the residents and visitors alike liked to take in a show at the historical theater, the Meyer Theater, or if they visited or had more fun during the summertime, many liked to visit the city's popular Bay Beach amusement park or spend some time at nearby beaches Green Bay had to offer. But of course, many residents and visitors like to take in a sports game, whether it be watching Green Bay's junior ice hockey team, the Green Bay Gamblers, or their famed NFL team, the Green Bay Packers. Ah yes, the Green Bay Packers. This team is what many would argue makes Green Bay famous. Between their multiple historic wins and their well-known fan base, many Packers fans gathered during the 1998-1999 season at Lambeau Field to watch their Packers play. However, one family gathered at the stadium not to watch the game, but to get answers. One of their loved ones had been missing for some time, and they were desperate to find them any way they knew how. However, as time went on, they would come to find out that finding them would be easier said than done. In the following case, you'll find out who went missing, the investigation, and the sad aftermath in a case I title The Diary. Thank you. On the evening of Monday, October 5th, 1998, thousands of fans gathered at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin, to witness the game between the Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings. Most of the fans were, of course, from the area, but some came to cheer on their Vikings as well. Unfortunately, the hometown heroes, the Packers, couldn't pull off the win and lost to the Vikings 37-24. As the bummed Packers fans filed out of the stadium, what many fans weren't expecting was a small crowd outside of the stadium who seemed frantic and somber. But not because of the losing game. It was because they were desperate to find their loved one. Reports state that the group passed out flyers to anyone who would take one at the stadium, and they waited to see if any of the fans could tell them about their missing loved one, 19-year-old Amber Wild. According to reports, Amber Wild was born and raised in Campbellsport, Wisconsin, mostly by her father Steve, but her mother Julie was also in her life. Reports state Amber was a very outgoing and loving child, and as she grew older, Amber decided she wanted to enter a career that helped people. By the time she reached high school, Amber decided she wanted to join the medical field. Specifically, she wanted to become a pediatrician. Luckily for Amber, during high school, the University of Wisconsin offered pre-med courses for some high school students in the area, so Amber took her chance and enrolled. Before Amber graduated high school in 1997, she received a full scholarship to her local community college to study pre-med. And instead of finishing the typical two-year program for an associate's degree, Amber finished in 1 year. By 1998, after completing her associate's, Amber transferred to the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay and continued her pre-med studies. However, even though Amber liked to challenge herself with her studies, she still had a social life, had friends, and went to parties like many of her other college peers. In a city like Green Bay, there were many bars and other alcohol-involved places to go for students. But reports state that since Amber was underage, she opted for house parties instead. And reports state that sometime between April and May 1998, the now 19-year-old Amber went to a house party with some friends, where she met a young man named Matthew Matt Schneider. Matt was a 20-year-old construction worker, burly in size and over 6 feet, and who some may say was relatively attractive. Just like Amber, Matt wanted to unwind with some friends, and when they met at the house party, there was some attraction between the two, and a report stated that the two became intimate back at her apartment. Amber and Matt parted ways after the party, and they didn't keep in contact for a while after the party, but just a short while after meeting, Amber found out she was pregnant. Amber was stunned, but so excited to be pregnant. When she broke the news to her family about her pregnancy, they too had the same reaction, and almost immediately told Amber they would help with the baby once they were born, so she could continue with her studies. As time went on and her pregnancy moved right along, Amber continued to ace her classes, and she seemed to be in good health for she and the baby. However, at the beginning of another semester, on September 23rd, 1998, Amber was involved in a minor car accident as she was driving to class. Reports state that as Amber was driving, she rear-ended another vehicle and smacked her head on her car windshield hard enough to crack the glass. It's unknown what caused Amber to rear-end the other car, but after the accident, Amber exchanged numbers with the driver of the other car in case they needed to keep contact. Then Amber went to her school's clinic, and they told her that she most likely had a concussion and that someone should check in on her throughout the day. Amber then went back to her apartment, called her father Steve, and told him that she felt okay but had a headache. Amber's father checked in on Amber frequently, but then Amber told him she was going to lie down and asked him to call her the next day to make sure she got up in time for her 1 p.m. class. Early on Thursday, September 24th, Steve called Amber to wake her for her classes, but she did not answer. He tried again and again, but there was no response from her. Having a bad feeling, Steve made his way from his home to Amber's apartment, which was an hour and a half away. When he got to the apartment, he tried the door, but it was locked. He knocked and got no answer. Then, since he had a key, Steve unlocked the door, but Amber was not inside. There was no sign of Amber, and her car and purse were gone. Now feeling really uneasy, Steve called Green Bay police. At first, they told him he had to wait 48 hours to file a missing persons report. And when that time came and there was still no sign of Amber, detectives began to help find her. Investigators did not find any sign of Amber as well at first, but then Steve told them about the car accident that she had on the 23rd. With this information, investigators thought her injuries might have been more severe than initially thought, and believed it was possible that Amber was confused and maybe had wandered off because of her head injury, and they assumed no foul play was involved. However, Amber's family didn't like this answer, as they thought, even with a head injury, that would be out of character for Amber to just wander off. As the days went on, detectives and Amber's family kept searching for her or any clue of her, but there was no luck. Steve also kept an eye on Amber's bank account, as he had access to this as well, just to see if there was any activity. He and his family wondered that maybe Amber just wanted to get away for a while, and maybe spent money on a trip somewhere. Or worst case, someone stole her bank card, and they could trace purchases, hoping whoever may have stolen from her could tell them where Amber was. But unfortunately, in the days after her disappearance, her bank account stayed the same, and there was no activity. Later in September, local news started reporting on Amber's disappearance, and it was the top story on many nights. By the last day of September, on the 30th, Steve paid Amber's rent because he thought maybe Amber would be back soon. And surprisingly, a few hours later, Steve received a call from Green Bay police telling him that Amber's car, a silver Subaru, had been found near Lambeau Field in a sports bar parking lot. Even worse, when police received the call that day around 6 p.m., employees told them the car had been there for about 2 days. When detectives examined the vehicle, they noticed that the keys were still in the ignition, Amber's cell phone was plugged into the cigarette lighter, and her purse was found inside the locked trunk. Detectives dusted the car for fingerprints and other DNA samples, but later on it was determined that although several prints were found, they could not be determined to be matched to any singular person or persons. Also during the investigation of the vehicle, Steve told detectives Amber always had the driver's seat forward as far as it would go, because she was shorter in size. But when they checked, the driver's seat was almost as far back as it would go. To detectives, this meant that if someone took Amber, they were a taller person, or may have been of average size and pushed the seat back to throw off detectives. Also, police learned Amber had an oil change 2 days before her disappearance, and the workers wrote down the mileage on her odometer. But when detectives checked the odometer during the investigation, they determined there were around 600 to 900 miles which could not be accounted for. By now, detectives knew something was very wrong. And just a few days after Amber's car was found at Lambeau Field, her loved ones passed out missing flyers to fans at the stadium, hoping someone had more information about her disappearance. Back at Amber's apartment, reports state detectives didn't find too much out of the ordinary from the initial investigation, until they took a look again around her place and found Amber's diary. Reports state, as detectives looked through Amber's diary for any clues, they came across an entry dated May 20th and 21st that threw them for a loop when they found out about Amber's pregnancy. In these entries, Amber detailed how she met a man named Matt at a house party, and that after meeting, they had consensual sex, and that she fell pregnant by him. Something else that struck detectives was that in an entry dated May 23rd, Amber wrote that Matt was engaged and that she wanted him to tell his fiancée about the pregnancy. But when he refused, Amber apparently spoke with Matt's fiancée herself and told her she was pregnant by Matt. When detectives questioned her family about Amber's diary entries, her aunt told them that Amber confided in her about her and Matt's situation, and that Matt didn't want his fiancée, Heidi, to find out about Amber's pregnancy. Amber's aunt also added that Matt pressured Amber into getting an abortion, but Amber strongly refused. He also became very angry when Amber apparently told Heidi about the pregnancy, and even angrier when Amber apparently told his parents as well, which was also documented in her diary. To detectives, they needed to speak to Matt Schneider. When investigators located Matt, they questioned him about Amber and her disappearance. Reports state he told them he didn't really know her, and that they met at a restaurant and talked maybe twice. He was also adamant that he and Amber never had sex, and that it was impossible he was the father of her unborn baby. Also at his home that day was his friend and co-worker Nick, who told detectives his girlfriend possibly saw Amber driving her silver Subaru in Wausau, Wisconsin, which is 95 miles away from Green Bay. However, detectives thought Nick's statement was odd because he gave police a detailed description of Amber's car, despite no public information being released when they visited Matt's home. And they wondered, how would Matt's friend know a description of Amber's car when Matt himself said he barely knew her? After they spoke with both men, detectives decided to take a closer look at both of them. But they determined they needed to focus more on Matt, since he was documented in Amber's diary and named by Amber's family as needing to be looked at as a suspect. And around the time they started speaking with Matt, detectives received an anonymous tip from someone who said they were sure they saw a young woman who matched Amber's description in the city of Shawano, Wisconsin. And curiously, this was where Matt and Nick worked at a construction site. When detectives found out this information, they subpoenaed a warrant to search the construction site and another subpoena for Matt's phone records, where again, they were struck when they spotted in plain sight 60 phone calls between Matt and Amber's numbers. But the phone calls abruptly stopped around the time Amber disappeared. The search at the construction site eventually also came up with nothing. During another round of questioning, detectives asked Matt about where he was around the time Amber went missing, but he could not provide a legitimate alibi. When they questioned him about the phone calls, his fiancée Heidi almost instantly interrupted and said Amber was making things up, and that Amber had some sort of fatal attraction to Matt. But then, reports state Matt and Heidi stopped cooperating with police altogether, leading police to another stopping point. But to Steve, he thought maybe Matt wasn't involved in his daughter's disappearance, at least not by himself, because Steve told police that Matt didn't seem that smart. As the investigation into Amber's disappearance went on, investigators, the public, and Amber's loved ones did not stop looking for her. Reports state an organization named Drivers for Quad Graphics volunteered to distribute copies of Amber's missing poster at truck stops, toll booths, and rest stations all throughout Wisconsin and Illinois. After a month passed since her family had last saw Amber, her family hired a private detective to assist in the investigation. Reports state that by this point, Steve had taken a leave of absence from his job to search for Amber. But even with his leave of absence and the hiring of a private investigator, Amber could not be found, or any viable clues. Desperate, Amber's parents held a press conference on November 6th, 1998, at the Green Bay Police Department. As they spoke, they pleaded to the public for any information about Amber and where she might be, and not to forget her. Amber's mother, Julie, specifically made a plea to deer hunters because she noted that in around 2 weeks from the press conference, deer hunting season was to begin, and they asked for hunters to be on the lookout for anything suspicious in the woods. Later in the month, Green Bay investigators formed a task force to look into Amber's disappearance. They enlisted officers from surrounding counties to help, as well as the State Division of Criminal Investigation and the FBI. However, even though the task force was strong and officers had plenty of years of experience, they could not find any other clues about Amber or her disappearance. By the end of 1998, Amber was still not found. And by January 1999, detectives told the public they had received many different calls about potential sightings of Amber, but nothing became of the tips. As a matter of fact, The lead detective in the case told the press, quote unquote, "We cannot put Amber Wilde anywhere after September 23rd, 1998. And by now, Amber's disappearance was believed to be the result of foul play. Even more heartbreaking was that by the time February 1999 came around, this was when Amber's baby was due. And due to this, detectives asked for hospitals in the area to keep an eye out for anyone matching Amber's description. But there was no Amber. In March 1999, Amber's family announced that they were offering a $10,000 reward for information leading to her recovery. But no one came forward with any new information. As the first anniversary of Amber's disappearance came and went, the task force dug around the area for any traces of Amber, but still came up with nothing. And although the investigation was not progressing, reports state detectives never stopped looking at Matt as a suspect. However, since he stopped cooperating and they did not have a body or any DNA samples, they couldn't arrest him. Fast forwarding to 2016, a new set of detectives publicly named Matthew and Nick as suspects in Amber's now presumed murder for the first time. Around the time of this statement, police told the press their theory. They believed that since Matt worked in road construction, in September 1998, they believed he killed Amber and buried her body underneath Highway 29, which was under construction at the time, with Nick's help. Some of the investigators believed the motive was that Amber refused to have an abortion, as Matthew demanded, and he became incensed that she talked to Heidi, his now wife for almost 20 years, and his parents about the situation. Despite this, detectives stated they still could not arrest Matt or Nick due to lack of true evidence, but didn't rule out that charges couldn't be filed one day. Curiously, in an interview with local media in 2020, Heidi told the press that Matt had nothing to do with Amber's disappearance. And she added, quote unquote, "I'm not a dumb woman. I wouldn't stay with someone if I thought he did that. I think it was easy for them at first to point a finger at Matt." The story of the disappearance of Amber Wilde comes from the sources of NBC 26, WBAY, Newsweek, and others I'll put in the notes. All right, so I'm going to be very quick with my thought piece on this story of Amber's disappearance. Like the detective has said, we all presume that Amber was unfortunately a victim of foul play, as well as her unborn baby. She may have had amnesia or had a severe head injury or mental health injury or brain injury, I should say, after her car accident and wandered off. But to me, I think she had help wandering off. You see the clues. For me, that struck one of the biggest things that struck me was that her car seat, her driver's seat, she pushed it all the way forward because she was short. But when they found the car, it was pushed all the way back. And the suspect, I don't want to say his name, but the suspect was around 6'5 or 6'4, very tall, burly. That, how convenient. I'm not sure about the other suspect who could have been an accomplice. I think he was taller too. That's curious, a curious fact for me. Also, the odometer had 600 to 900 miles that could not be accounted for. That's odd. And the suspects worked at construction sites. How convenient that would be to discard someone, unfortunately. I think that the suspects that the detectives have named could very well be guilty of the crime of foul play against Amber if she did become a victim and the baby become victim of foul play, which it is pretty much alluded to because no one has seen any trace of Amber since 1998. I think someone who had amnesia or something would still be found unless she became, you know, had another tragic accident like falling into a river or something, or, you know, I don't know, something like that. It could be a possibility, but I don't think so. I think she was a victim of foul play along with the baby because someone wanted her to stop talking. Someone wanted her and the baby to go away, have that problem. Unfortunately, they weren't a problem, but a problem to someone to go away. I think that person who was named as a suspect got really upset, like police have said, because they told Amber, allegedly told their fiance that they were pregnant by them, and pretty much he's a cheater. But again, no one really knows because there's no DNA evidence, there's no trace of Amber or the baby. The suspects stopped dealing with the police. Here we are, decades later, no trace, no nothing of Amber. And going back to her father saying the suspect was not that smart, you never know. They could have had, like I said, like police said, accomplices help them discard of Amber and the baby. If they weren't that smart themselves, maybe someone else came up with a plan to discard Amber and the baby. We will just never know. But that's how I feel about the case. And that's it. Thank you for tuning into this 90s Crime Time mystery episode. And I hope that it intrigued your interest. If you liked what you heard and have not done so, please leave a review for 90s Crime Time. Hopefully a good one. But if not, I understand. I've been saying this for years. I will try to get better. You can also follow 90s Crime Time on Instagram, where I frequently where I frequently post other 90s stories, primarily on the weekend. And do not worry, I know it was gone for a very long time, several months, but I plan on having new episodes on a steady basis again, so look out for new episodes very soon. With that, stay safe and healthy, and I will see you soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.